I'm Smith Called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Heiler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Previously on Fuel.
You know, if you go to work every day and you spend 8 hours a day or whatever and more in an agency, let's be frank, you know, basically trying to drive consumption, right? That's a fundamental contradiction with saying you're going to help the climate. We can't just switch off the economy, but frankly, don't insult our intelligence by saying we can save climate by consuming, because we can't. You know, advertisers think that they know that they need to drive emotion in advertising to be effective, but they think they do that now through talking about the biggest problems in society. Maybe if we had little tin men that ridicule us for boiling potatoes for 20 of their earth minutes, we might be in better shape.
This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet fuel.
I don't really believe that we work in the advertising industry. And the reason I say that is I think the ad industry has suffered one of the greatest stealthy mistakes of, you know, of its entire history recently, where what we've woken up with are a bunch of companies that I think are client services companies. They're in the business of client services. And then there are some companies that are in the business of creativity. Everyone I know who went to that gig with me came out going, hand on God, hand on, and you're like, super weird.
Welcome everyone to Fuel, the new business podcast, and I'm your host, a Smith Called Keith. Oh boy, we've got a proper treat for you, a full-on no-holds-barred interview with arguably one of the most well-known creative leaders in the global advertising industry. We never set out to do this, but Fuel is now the podcast where the great and the significant creative heads come to play. Nils Leonard is on the show this week, former Firestarter at Grey London, who with his new agency Uncommon is carving out a new business model for creative agencies. Nils is absolutely true to his vision of leading with inspirational thinking. Every challenge is treated completely differently, but attacked by the team with passion, vision, fresh ideas, and creative umami. Uncommon is exactly what it says. It doesn't behave like any other creative agency. Its work is its brand, its portfolio, its positioning, and clients receive work that has an uncommon quality running right through it like a stick of rock. And if this show inspires you to revisit how your agency approaches a pitch, then Fuel's business partner, The Advertist, is your agency's secret to finding that client. Since 2014, The Advertist has been helping agencies with the new business prospecting process. All your new business managed in one place. Stay on top of the latest breaking news, insight, people moves, tenders, mergers, acquisitions, blue chip and freshly funded companies with all the contact data to help drive your next new business campaign. Just email hello at theadvertist.com. That's theadvertist.com. And you'll get a free trial and you can test it for yourself. Fuel is a proud member of the Marketing Podcast Network, which does exactly what it says on the tin. It's a network of marketing shows, PR, digital content and influencer marketing, sales and entrepreneur podcasts. And if you like this show, then check out all the others at marketingpodcast.net. Special note, Jason Falls, the founder of MPN, will be speaking at a special Zoom webinar about how to build your podcast community. That's on Tuesday, May the 10th, 2022, between 11 a.m. and 12 p.m. Pacific time. So that's 7 to 8 p.m. British time. I'll put a link where you can sign up for free in the show notes. Okay, my friends, enough of this advertising malarkey. Let's get on with the show. Here's me talking with Nils Leonard of Uncommon. Enjoy.
Stand by in three,
when you get an opportunity to interview one of the most creative people in advertising globally, you don't turn it down. Former Chief Creative Officer of Grey London, Nils Leonard was one of the youngest agency chairmen in the world, overseeing two Grand Prix awards at Cannes Lion. During that time, Grey was also named Most Awarded Agency of the Year twice in 3 years at DNAD. Like our recent guest, James Murphy, Nils could have been content with those plaudits, but turns out his work was far from complete. Nils is also a passionate advocate of change and diversity in the creative industry. And as one of the Sunday Times' most 500 most influential people in the UK, his words matter and they carry weight. He's also got some rather valuable words of advice for agencies when it comes to winning new business. So I think we're all in for a highly educational hour or so. And keeping the creative brain fueled is critical. And I'm sure that one of the good habits we'll discuss is the ethical capsule coffee brand Halo, which he founded in 2020. And that GQ announced was the coffee-keeping Nespresso ambassador George Clooney awake at night. But we don't need George Clooney because we've got a chance to chat with someone with an equally wonderful Hollywood smile and a charming manner.
Oh, my God.
It must be something to do with a coffee. Most recently, Nils founded the Uncommon Creative Studio alongside Lucy Jameson and Natalie Graham. So there's a lot to cover. Creativity, awards, winning new business, coffee, diversity, entertainment and music. So let's get on with it and extend a warm welcome to Nils Leonard, an uncommon leader. Hello.
Thank you. Jesus. Can you just come everywhere with me and do that? I love it.
How are you, my friend?
I'm really good. I'm really good. I have a week here, right? So sort of starting to chill, taking the weight off, and good to talk to you.
Excellent stuff. And you're all in good health, everyone there?
All good, man. Yeah, it's been really good at Uncommon, actually. We honestly, the other day, we had about 85 people back in the studio. We're about 110 people now.
Oh, fantastic.
And we had about 85 of us back in the studio, which was a really good feeling, you know, proper noisy, buzzy. You could see some people were irritated by it. They were like, oh no, I can't find somewhere to sit. And, you know, they've been used to having this massive space to themselves, but it was really good. And of course, everyone then carried on and got obliterated.
So you're all in uncommonly good health then?
We are.
Excellent. All right. Well, I promise that's the puns over and done with. You are I've spoken to you a couple of times now, and you're a very motivated and an energetic person. I mean, so straight out of the gate here. I mean, given what you've just said and the fact everybody's returning back to work and, you know, there's lots of buzz in the air. I mean, how do you feel when you hear stuff that the advertising industry's its glory days are over and now it's kind of more function over form, all that sort of stuff? I mean, how does that make you feel?
Well, mixed. I'm going to be really honest. I can't help myself really, but the spirit of candor. I know lots of people say this, I don't really believe that we work in the advertising industry. And the reason I say that is I think the ad industry has suffered one of the greatest stealthy mistakes of its entire history recently, where what we've woken up with are a bunch of companies that I think are client services companies. They're in the business of client services. And then there are some companies that are in the business of creativity. And I think there's nothing in the middle. And I think the businesses in the client services world, they're about speed, they're about delivery, they're about cost, they're about efficiency, they're about spreadsheets, they're about assets, they're about content. And I think as a result, of course, if you're in the client services industry, you can't move without the client's permission. You can't do things without the client's permission. Or not dangerous, respected, or arguably a partner, because the word service implies you work for them. We didn't want to start Uncommon to do that, and we'll talk about that a bit later. But
sure.
The ad industry and all of its problems, I think, are rooted in dependency. You know, you hear lots of people whinging about the lack of bravery and, you know, there's so much fear in agencies now. Well, if you're offering people 90% of what you're offering them is just yes and quicker and better, and you're not offering them radical creativity solutions to their problems that weren't on the brief they sent you, if what you're sought out for is not creativity, how can you possibly expect to be respected for it?
Yeah.
So forgive me, but the ad industry is in a shit it made for itself when it decided to not stand for the one magic power we had, which is, of course, creativity.
And so, I mean, you know, obviously, I mean, do you feel there's too much yes saying all about at the moment, and that's part of the solution? Or
I remember being at Grey, and honestly, I was addicted to winning pitches. I was addicted to just winning, and I had a win-lose draw honestly, a hand-drawn, people who know me will there'll be the proof to this. I had a win-lose-draw thing under my desk with clients' names next to it that we pitched, and I would tick a win every time. I was like, yeah, we won them. Not thinking for a second, of course, about why we'd won them, whether we should have, what sort of work they were going to make with us, what they would say about Grey in the future. You know, and it dawned on me that just trying to win in general is the industry's problem. And we would do anything at Grey to win those clients at that time. And I was like, well, hang on a minute, that's slightly broken, because what happens is you just want to win. And then they go, hey, so we'd like you to do this thing. And you realize it's not the thing you wish you could do every day.
Right.
So at Uncommon, we set out and we said, this is what we're going to be about. And we were lucky enough to make some of that work. And now everyone we meet, every time we meet anybody, we say, why are you here? And if they say, well, I saw a bit of work of yours, or I saw the B&Q stuff, or I saw that H&M one second suit thing, they're on the right track because they know what it is we do. They know what we enjoy making. And so, of course, they come to us and ask for that. A lot of our clients tend to be in a moment of change or a moment of you know, wanting to transform their business or their fortunes. So they tend to come with that in mind. The reason I make this point is ultimately when they say they don't know why they with or we're just on a list, we really don't tend to end up working with them.
Right.
And what I've learned is we don't need to win clients that don't want to make what we make. In fact, it's not just about making great work. It's actually a distraction. If you spend 6 months working with a client you don't like, making work you're not going to respect, you've not only made a load of bad work, you've literally lost 6 months of your opportunity. And so all of that, forgive me for blurbing, but I think all of that's rooted in the industry's problems, really, to some degree. We've lost sight of why we all want to get out of bed in the morning.
Yeah, and I mean, that was, you know, as I alluded to earlier, I think that James Murphy said it as well, you know, is that there is a lot of, you know, people in the industry that, you know, that have fallen out of love with the idea of what it is to be, you know, to be an agency and to be creative and stuff. But, I mean, I guess, you know, the point I'm trying to drive at is that, obviously, you know, when you were at Grey, you were sort of doing, you were stepping into other shoes, and you were fulfilling a sort of a corporate need and stuff. But, you know, you've had the chance to with Uncommon to create something in your own image. I mean, you know, what was the driver there behind the creation of Uncommon? I mean,
Well, a few things. I've been in the industry 20 years. It's interesting, Murphy. You know, I know James, and he's got a very ferocious energy, I'd argue, too. And I'd been in the industry 20 years, and I'd scratched the surface with some work where I thought, hang on a minute, that was not only good and respected and won plaudits, which, of course, I'm a needy fucker like all creatives, that was nice. I realised it was also additive in the real world, that people in the real world who weren't in our industry had noticed it. Around the same time, a client came to see me in a pitch, and they asked this question. They said, Nils, how do I go from being a brand that sells shit to people to being a brand that people wish existed? And I was like, fucking hell, what an amazing question to ask in a pitch. A brand that people wish existed, right?
Right.
Given that 3/4 of brands in the world right now could disappear and no one would care. That's an actual stat. And so I was like, well, that's really interesting. And then I stopped and I said, well, never mind you. How do I do that? How do I actually become a brand or create a brand that people in the real world wish existed? And I thought, well, that's really meaningful, because the ad industry is obsessed with the ad industry. It's like, where do we sit in the ad industry, and what would the ad industry say if we Uncommon's obsessed with the world and where we sit in the world. I'd rather your, you know, husband or wife or your mother or daughter knew our name,
right?
You know, it's great that we make a dent in our industry, but I want Uncommon to be a word like Pixar, like Netflix, like, you know, Heatherwick, arguably, like, that stands for the most important and influential creative problems of our time. And that struck me as a really good thing to do. And the reason I made that point lastly is, honestly, don't you just want to wake up and matter a little bit more? You know, I've always joked that we're in the queue for hell with lawyers and estate agents currently. We are, man. I mean, there's a button on the internet to skip our entire industry. How many other industries can you fucking skip? So we have to have a word with ourselves and ask ourselves what business we're in, I think, because I have no interest at all in being more gigabyte landfill for people to skip. You know, I don't want to contribute to that.
Oh, man. You know what? I knew this would be good. I've never really thought about the idea that there is an actual button that just deletes the entire business, you know, in one go.
That's nuts. Like, and someone felt compelled to make that because they were being force-fed so badly stuff they didn't want to see. When did we become that, man? You know, there was I can't remember the name of it. I used to use it a lot. There's a chart that said, they asked people, do you look forward to the ads on telly as much as you look forward to the programs? And in 1990, that was true.
Right.
So in 1990, probably like Guinness Surfer-tastic, I don't know. But people were sat there going, oh, the ads are on. I love ads. Right. We're in a point now where we're in negative equity there, right? We're kind of like, people are paying actual money to avoid us.
Yeah.
Right. So you then go to yourself, well, what am I a part of? So when that brief comes in and the client goes, I need loads more of this display level shit to fist people with all over the internet, you go, well, if I'm in the business of supplying people with that, that's a radically different business to creativity over here, I think. And this is the business I'd rather be in.
Oh, man. Well, I mean, so, you know, a lot of this is about kind of, you know, I mean, what you've said about the clients that tend to come to you, you know, they're looking for, they're looking for a, or they have a purpose, or they're looking for a purpose or whatever. And then, you know, the two of you tend to find each other because you're on a shared mission. And I mean, we covered this with Lucky Generals as well, about, you know, people come to them because they have a shared mission, or they have a goal of a mission in hand, rather than just the need to create a, you know, next year's advertising campaign or whatever. But I mean, linked to that is, you know, obviously one of the reasons why I was very keen to talk to you, because I mean, you've got some great advice when it comes to the whole winning new business side of things. You know, how do agencies win new business? Because, you know, there is a question of whether, like you were saying about the win, lose, draw thing, you know, is that what drives you, or is it the creative work? And I mean, we had a couple of shows not so long ago with quite influential growth consultants on either side of the pond, and we were talking about how an agency grows from like the six-figure income into the sevens and the eight-figure income. And so what's your advice about how sort of agency leaders and CEOs should approach this? And I mean, you know, should they just keep their eyes focused on the growth side of it?
Okay. So growth is obviously important for any company. It's the lifeblood of a business. If you're not getting new briefs, new clients, new opportunities in your company, it's not just about revenue growth. It's sort of, you know, becomes stagnant. And so it's the lifeblood is new opportunity of our businesses. But I remember seeing a guy get on his fucking knees at Grey. Okay. There was a guy in a global pitch, got on his knees, held his arms out and went, we will deliver this. Give us your business. I remember thinking to myself, what fucking business am I in, man? It wasn't showmanship. It wasn't like a power beg or whatever they call it. It was just pathetic. And I thought to myself,
that's a thing, a power beg.
Yeah. Oh my God, man. I heard that. So apparently there's this term where, you know, at the end of a meeting or whatever, the founder or the CEO will get up and kind of go, and here's the last thing I'm going to leave you with. And they'll do a power beg apparently. And you're supposed to be moved by this.
Oh, wow.
I'm like, anything with the word begging implies again, we've really talked ourselves as an entire industry into the wrong end of this equation. Name the least attractive person, right? It's the neediest one. Like, it's the most attractive human state, not giving a fuck. Like, it's the most attractive thing when someone doesn't need you or it or anything.
The James Dean sort of approach.
Right. And the way, and this is the truth though, the way to get there is to have a mission outside of winning those clients. If your mission is something else and winning those clients is something you do on the way to that, then it's cool because people can see eye to eye with you. If your only mission is winning those clients, well, of course, that's a short term. It's like just to the lamppost, just to the car, just to the, it's never going to work. And by the way, that's true for the people that work with you as much as the clients you attract, you know? And so uncommon thing is like, look, we see the world like this. We think the woods are burning in the world. We think the world's never needed creativity, and brands, by the way, have never been more powerful to actually make a difference in the world as they are now. If you see the world like that and you see yourself as a part of the world, not just a category or a shelf, then we can do work together. And when people arrive and they see that, literally we're as ferocious with them as they are with us. So they'll come in and they'll go, hey, how are you? And they'll go, you know, tell us about your company. And I'll say, right, tell me about yours. Why are you here? What work of ours did you like? Have you heard us speak? You know, what do you really need here? You know, and if they say a 1% uplift in our cheese sales and slightly more synergy, we literally say no, thank you. And the reason we do that, we had a real fuck up 2 weeks into the start of Uncommon. So we had to have a standing start. I was being, you know, slightly pursued by lawyers from my previous employer.
It wouldn't be fair.
And so as a result, we weren't able to drum up any new business. So we had a total standing start, right? And about 2 weeks in, a big West Coast client came over and we were like, oh my God, this is amazing. And they gave us, you know, they were like, it's going to be 500 grand fee. It's going to be like, and we were like, holy shit, that's fucking awesome. And of course we said to them, but we were super needy at the time thinking, oh my God, this is great. We said to them though, you know, you read our stuff. And they said, yeah, we read that article and campaign. We love it. They hadn't, by the way. And then of course we start working, and what went from, we'd love you to talk about small to medium sized businesses really impacting on the world and doing their thing, to went to, can you tell them how our platform plays a brilliant role in selling on their, you know, and we were like, hang on a minute, that was that the deal? Lucy and I in particular started arguing, the whole dynamic of our team fell apart, the work was shit, and we sort of went, okay, stop. We backed out. The very next day after we backed out, Ovo picked up the phone and called us and said, we've read all your stuff, we want to make a difference in energy, can we come see you? And that was our first piece of work at Uncommon. Ended up being an ad with Slayer on it, with the speech from Network, get mad, you know. And it was like arguably as much of an advert for Uncommon as it could have been. And I look back with gratitude and humility at whatever enabled those circumstances to happen, because literally that ad, that whole conversation, that whole campaign told me that our dream of Uncommon could be true. You know, it said, okay, you said all this stuff about trying to matter, and you said all this stuff about using rage and fury and all that stuff to motivate people. And we were then able to do that in a piece of work. And so I was very validated.
It's almost like it kind of embodied everything that you were trying to do, wasn't it? You know, that whole sort of push-pull of, you know, we need the money, but we don't want to sacrifice the creativity thing. I think, as you know, I mean, it's
shouldn't
fantastic.
Shouldn't you though, Keith, with that in mind, shouldn't every partnership embody both values? You know, in the way that brands collaborate with, say, I don't know, you know, influencers or celebrities, aren't the best of those a genuine merger of values? So I look at The Guardian. At that point, Britain was in the middle of its vote. You know, we did Hope is Power. That could have been a campaign for us as much as them. That was how I felt about it. You know, and so I kind of go, with all that in mind, I think the only thing you have as an agency or a studio, really, if you're in the business of creativity, you don't have systems that change clients' worlds. You don't. You don't have technology that's going to reinvent. You don't, man. You fucking don't. All you have is how you see the world. Those are the only differences a creative company has. And ironically, that's actually, you can't copy that. It's a magic. It's power. And so how Uncommon sees the world, if when it aligns with our clients, I'd argue we make spectacular work and we also make money and we also grow. You know, and when it doesn't, we also know when to not choose people. And I think more studios and agencies should think about whether they have a selection filter.
That's very cool. That's very cool. I mean, but arguably, again, on the other side of that sort of discussion is the you know, the discussion that, you know, agencies shouldn't have these big, grand, altruistic ambitions, that they're there to sell products. You know, they're there to drive demand and stuff. I mean, you know, is that... I mean, you know, how do you respond to those sorts of claims?
I respond by saying, where do you want to work? Where would you rather work? Hi, Mum. What have you been up to the weekend? Ah, well, I sold more cheese with some 5 out of 10 platform programmatic advertising, you know, or I played a part in the UK's biggest mental health conversation by stopping national television for ITV. And the reason I frame it that way isn't to be a total dick. I'm going, where would you rather work? Mm-hmm. Not enough. Robert Savile at Mother once said to me, Nils, the difference, I've read a load of your shit in campaign, and the difference between the stuff that's good and the stuff that's bad, he said, is when you're bad, you're trying to be clever and you're trying to speak to clients. This is years ago. And he said, when you're really, really good, he said, and you are sometimes, he said, you're speaking directly to talent. And I've never forgotten that. Imagine everything we did was an advert for our talent, not our clients. And so I look at Uncommon and go, all our work is primarily an advert for creative-minded people to come work here. It also works for our clients. But that's a powerful sentiment, right? Because you go, okay, where do you want to work? So sure, if you want to go out and sell stuff, by the way, go out and sell stuff, that's brilliant. We like making effective work too. But why stop there? You know, why would you stop there when you can make a real difference in the world, when the brands you work with could actually impact on the world around you, or just be ferociously funny or famous or provocative? Why would you just stop at selling? You know, and the people having these conversations, I'd argue, the people who just don't believe they can't see themselves at that level for one reason or another. And I think that's a bit of a shame too.
Yeah. No, I get that. I mean, obviously, I think that, it's an interesting reference that you bring. And it's almost like when you see, you know, I mean, I know you have connections in the music industry as well. And I mean, we'll come on to that in a bit. But it's like when you see a singer actually really performing a song rather than just doing something, you know, that there is where the heart is, basically, is, you know, it makes a hell of a difference. But
I think we spoke about this before, I can't remember. I went to a German creative festival, and I walked in, and there were all these posters, and there were these fly posters down the wall, and they all had a gravestone on them, an empty gravestone. And people were asked to fill them in, and I was like, whoa, that's punchy. And so I walked down the end to go and have a look at it, and the one at the end said Content Solutions. And I was like, okay. Because these are the jobs we do. Mm. You know, Daniel Ek actually has the best quote ever to move past all this. So the value of a company is directly attached to the amount of problems it solves. And I thought that's fucking great. So why don't we ignore whether we should be selling or whether we should be being creative? It's not a fucking choice. How many problems is your company solving in the world? And if it's not solving any, why? And if it is solving some, are they just marketing problems or are they societal problems? And I'm like, why not to try to do all of it? Why wouldn't you?
Bloody hell. Nice. Good stuff. Excellent. And so I just want to circle back on something you said. I don't want to pull you up on the subject of mental health, because I mean, I think obviously given what we're all sitting in at the moment and what we're all going through, I mean, it's not just a problem for the creative industry. I mean, it's everywhere. It's in all sort of areas of business. And, you know, as a bipolar sufferer myself in the past, I mean, you know, I have my own take on it, and I think a lot of depression and a lot of bad mental health is sort of triggered by, you know, environment and the episodes, and thinking that it's a problem that only you can solve and all that sort of business. And I mean, and also, you know, given the way that the media is sort of blasting us 24/7 with news about, you know, the war and the economy and global warming, which we'll come on to later and stuff, supply chain problems, all that sort of thing, I think it's very easy to kind of let this stuff overwhelm you slightly. And I mean, it can, you know, it can sort of be too much for a lot of people. I mean, what inspired your work behind the ITV sort of Better Health, mental health campaign?
Man, that was a very articulate picture of the world. I'd love to talk a bit more about that, but that sure. Particular piece of work, ITV, you know, they've got 12 million people watch them on a Saturday, something like 34 million a week or something watch ITV, right? There's still an immense channel. And that's still, if you think about it, I guess someone called them campfire moments, but there are very rare moments where we all do the same thing together anymore. You know, everything is disparate, right? And so they were saying, look, we do want to matter. We've always actually, with the programming they've made, much more than people know, they've always danced in the issues of our time. You know, they had a trans storyline in Corrie like 20 years before it was even a thing that the media were acknowledging, right? So there's loads there, and they weren't known for it. And they said, okay, we want to make a meaningful stride here. What are we going to do? And we did months of work with them, and they realized they wanted to get into mental health, primarily because between mobiles and televisions and screens in general, families are sat there and they're not talking. We're just not anymore. We're all on this, you know. And so they said, look, how do we matter in mental health? And we sat there and we went, okay, that's great. Well, let's do it. And then we realized, of course, we could be in massive danger of being the biggest hypocrites on the planet in that. Imagine part of the problems of mental health, i.e. a channel where the news sits on it and all these issues and, you know, basically runs an ad going, oh, we should look after our mental health, and then carries on doing what it was doing. And we were like, fuck, okay, that we can't do. We can't just run an ad going, think about your mental health, and then carry on. And so we said, well, we have to do something massively meaningful. And we said, so why don't we stop the biggest show on a Saturday, Anton Deck, you know, and stop it and introduce a new thing called Britain Get Talking. And it sounds incredibly simplistic, but the biggest thing we can do for our mental health, particularly at that point, and particularly through the pandemic, is just talk to each other. There's all these sciences and there's all these other overused words. And I think half the fear around taking on mental health is that you'll have to read War and Peace in order to fix yourself. And ironically, talking, particularly amongst families, was one of the biggest things you could do, is just opening up and talking to each other and seeing how you're all doing. So we stopped the show and we gave everyone, you know, a good minute back. It was very awkward and weird. And then since then, we've interrupted almost every area of the channel. We did a load more work. It's been going for 3 years. It's now generated over 100 million conversations. It's the most recognized mental health campaign in the UK ever. That wasn't by design. That is an amazing output of ITV's. We couldn't have dreamt of that, but that's where that came from. And, you know, hopefully a really, when we're talking about this, anyone cynical about our ability to impact on culture and impact on our country and impact in the world needs to look at that campaign and go, that's a partnership we made with a client. Now, we didn't go into it going, that's all we were going to do. Hopefully we've dragged new eyeballs to ITV. Hopefully we've got people to reappraise it, all those other things which we know we've done. But that is an example of what I mean when I say that creativity can impact massively, you know, and I think we all just need to remember our power a bit more. But anyway, that was what we did.
Well, I mean, okay, so you talk about, you know, the fact that, you know, that you're on a shared mission with a, you know, with a client and stuff, and you're invested with it. I mean, what kind of, was there something on your side, on, you know, on your, the uncommon side of it, that made it mean so much?
Well, yeah, I mean, well, honestly, I mean, personally and just professionally in the studio, when you start a company, much more than when you run one, I would argue, running a company, this is awful, but I'll say it. I think when you run a company, people are a problem. Your people are a problem. They're like a problem. They're like a job.
Yes, they're a thing that happens, yeah.
And when you start a company, they're absolutely everything. And you are not just your company success, your life and your future and paying your house and your family and all that stuff are wrapped up in it. So you have a weird investment in each other you don't have normally. And I think you see each other a bit more. And so I'm there with three boys, you know, my wife, Charlotte, and, you know, we've all got our families and we're all wrapped up in this big, massive concern, started arguably to point at the world's biggest problems. And then everyone we took on, a bit like the conversation we were having, they're all people that see the world a bit like we do. So, you know, I've got two people who were suffering from bipolar in the team and on and off in their lives and lots of other stuff. And they all came wanting to make a difference in their own way, you know. And if you imagine your whole MO is to attempt to get people to make a dent in the things they care about, not just in the category, well, a lot of them care about that.
Yeah, and it became personal.
And particularly as COVID happened, that was insane, you know. And I have so much respect for ITV. I mean, we made 250 films during that period. 250. We became almost a program maker. We made content throughout the whole channel that kept getting people to talk. We started publishing everyone talking to each other while we were all locked down, messages to each other's relatives. It was like, you know, looking back, man, it was super powerful actually, and very emotional time.
Fantastic. I mean, it obviously, you know, people are still obviously talking about it now, and you know, it's a sort of a big deal for you. And I'm, you know, I'm very very glad that you brought that up into, you know, into the public forum for people to talk about, because I think, you know, certainly with things like mental health, shining a light on it and having it as a you know, something that can be talked about, and taking the taboos away from it, as a discussion point, I think is absolutely important. And okay, so let's talk about another taboo. Let's talk about sex. Okay.
Yeah.
It's one of the oldest. It is the oldest. I think is it. It is the oldest. Probably. Anyway, but so I mean, when we spoke, you said you're getting involved in the sex game.
Yeah, it's not quite going well enough, so I'm working the weekends doing that. No, I'm on OnlyFans, guys. Get on there and you know, subscribe.
What's the initiative all about? What are you doing?
So we start our own brands, as you know, as well as, you know, working on our clients' businesses. It was always our dream that we would create our own. And a really interesting sort of thing was bubbling up, and we were reading about it, you know, which is actually the idea that sex is actually dying. And that might sound insane, but think about the arrival of dating apps. Think about a mix of COVID and how that's changed our physicality with each other. And think about just how strangely we are far less able to approach each other and have conversations and meet each other and all that other stuff. it's going so far as to say that actually in Japan, there are sort of subgroups of people going, we're just not going to have sex anymore. It's hard. It's too hard. It's actually just too much fucking hard work, too much emotional load. So we're like, Jesus, there's this insight in the world that, that sex in general and intimacy is dying. Anyway, we also then meet these guys who are like, look, we want to start a condom brand. We think it's a really good time to do it. And what we'd want to do is start a brand where for every condom that you buy, we'll send one to the developing world, because obviously sexually transmitted diseases and all that other stuff are a massive problem out there, and they just don't have them. So we were like, great. So we're like, okay, can we do it environmentally friendly? Yes, we can. Can we start this brand? And then we were like, brilliant. So what a brilliant place to start a brand around that subject matter of sex is dying, you know? And actually, of course, sex is fucking amazing. We should be the biggest fans of sex. But of course, every condom you buy as part of the subscription service will go, there'll be another one will go to the developing world. It's called Sex Brand. That's the name of it, which I love too.
Get more plain than that, yeah, does it?
Well, I love it. You know, yeah. Have you seen Sex Brand? It's like, what? Sex Brand? It's cool, and it's going to be, it's breaking very, very shortly, and we're really excited by it. We've done everything from like we said, the whole conception of the brand with the guys all the way to the aesthetic and the vibe and its mission, and we'll be working really closely with them on that. You know, that's one of those ones where I'm like, hopefully you'll see that, like making a dent or trying to be additive or trying to do something more meaningful isn't at the expense of fun and humor and sex and laugh. You can do it all, right? That's the gag. And that's when life's at its most fun. So yeah, I'm getting into the sex game.
Good for you. Well done. Excellent. And is that what it's about? I mean, as far as you're concerned, because I know that there are agencies whose business model is to work with brands or whatever. But I mean, you very much incubate products, don't you? I mean, you take it right from the ground up. And I mean, does that give you a different insight creatively?
Of course it does. Yeah, but also think about it from the starting question, which is the state of the ad industry.
Right.
How there's something that dawned on me, which is, as an ad agency, are you dependent on people much less ambitious than you to make your dreams come true? And more often than not, you are, because you're asking a client who's got a different list to you for permission to do brilliant things. Now, there's only so long you can keep doing that before you say to yourself, why don't I just go and start the brand so I can do exactly what I want? Right? So it's not just, we like to do startups because that's a cool word. It's like, no, startups are a vehicle for independence. So Halo, that's our business. We can grow it, right? Sex Brand is ours. We started an accelerator called Unrest, run by a brilliant guy called Orr. We put about 20 to 25 purpose-led brands through that a year. Please check it out online. It's recruiting the next cohort now. But there's some amazing brands in there. And of course, fostering them, bringing them into a culture, they're all in our basement, man. They're all literally down there buzzing away. We've just got funding to launch it up north, which I'm really excited about. I've got family in Doncaster, so up north in England, and I'm very excited about that. And that's us going, like, and again, in classic honesty, imagine a sexy version of Unilever. Imagine if that existed, where all the brands were brands that the world loved, and you were like, I really love that Sex Brand, and those Halo guys are great, and whatever else. Well, that wouldn't that be an amazing thing to have played a part in, in 10 years' time? You go, okay, not only have we changed the landscape in terms of conversation and fame in the ad industry, but we've added 15 to 20 incredible, globally referenced brands to the mix. That's just fun, man. And a byproduct of that is that all our people know how to start them, know how to build them, understand the mechanics of fame.
Wow.
All those things are pretty good, I think.
And how do those brands come to you? I mean, how do those sort of creators come to you?
Well, originally, so Halo literally, and the business was a howling mess for many years, I'll be completely honest. Halo originally was two guys who were knee deep in luxury coffee who went, I think we might want to start a coffee brand. And I literally created a box before we even knew what we were selling. And we were like, oh, that looks good, And we found these capsules, and the capsule was a completely compostable version of Nespresso. And we were like, well, God, wouldn't it be brilliant if we could put this out there? Nespresso, by the way, put 13,000 capsules a minute into landfill. It's just fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we were like, right, how do we do something there that not only challenges that, but puts better coffee in those capsules? And that was fun, right? And then we were like, right, let's do a few more. Of course, starting brands by yourself, what you realize, Keith, is actually, and this is a common creative flaw, is you go, I've had an amazing idea for a outdoor picnic blanket company. And you go, oh, great, wonderful. And then you realize, I don't want to run a picnic blanket company. I don't want to do that. And so what dawned on us was, we do want to create purpose-built brands. We don't want to create brands for the sake of it, but we also want to find what we call bus drivers, who are people who love that brand and going to drive it forwards, enabling us to do our bit, but not being responsible for the forward momentum of the brand.
So you kind of step away and let them...
Yeah. So that's Sex Brand. You know, the guys running that are great. And then similarly with Unrest, you know, looking at that, they've all got their own founders. They've all got their own, you know, leaders. That's the point. And Uncommon come in and just go, look, here's how we might change the brand. Here's how your narrative might move forwards. Here's what we should do to make you famous. Here's how your internal culture might change to make you a more attractive place to work. All those things. So that's sort of the best way to work, I think, is there's someone driving that bus as fast as they can, and we're on it just trying to make the bus as sexy and as famous and as meaningful as it can be. That's even remotely an analogy.
Well, a sexy bus, I guess there must be such a thing. You know. So, I mean, just very quickly, I mean, have you always been a coffee fan?
I'm a coffee fan, yeah. Love coffee. Good. Drink about 4 cups a day of it.
Good. Excellent. And any plans to do a kind of, because it's a capsule only, right?
Yeah, at the moment, yeah. We talked about selling. There's all sorts of complexities in selling different types of coffee.
Is there? Oh, right. Okay. Because, I haven't got a capsule machine, but so this...
No, well, yeah, go on, sorry.
I was going to say, but it rivals, I mean, it uses the Nespresso mechanism, right?
So you can use it in an espresso machine, but it's a completely remodeled, patented capsule in its own right.
Right.
Completely biodegradable. So after you've used it, you can lob it in your garden. People have grown like tomatoes out of them and other stuff. The other thing I think is good about it, and we're not the only one with this now, but it's the most biodegradable capsule you can buy with the best coffee in it, I would argue. So not, you know, it dawned on us that there are two problems with Nespresso. One, of course, is the polluted nature of the product and, by the way, its entire manufacture.
Right.
But the other was the coffee in it was pretty lame. Like, it was the equivalent of, like, you know, getting a, you know, I don't know, like a, just, you know, McDonald's or something.
Coffee,
it wasn't like, yeah. So we were like, well, what if we filled ours with amazing, amazing coffee? So one of the coffees we launched originally was Kopi Luwak for £100 a pack. And we launched that, being honest with you, £10 a capsule.
Wow.
And we launched that. Yeah. And we launched that, being honest with you, thinking this is a really interesting experiment and it's a big statement about our intent, but we'll never sell any. We sold out of those in 2 weeks, man. You know, we sold out in 2 weeks. And it just tells you, A, there are some people with a lot of money, but B, the world is a really interesting place. And if you make something, you know, this is a big thing. If you just go and try and make something, I swear to God, the world does reward you in some way. It kind of goes, okay, well done. And, you know, the more you put out, the more I've seen that.
Amazing. And I mean, okay, so this ties back into the mental health thing and the launching of products and stuff like that. I mean, you're a naturally creative person anyway, and part of that creative process has to involve a degree of failure at somewhere along the line. I mean, you know, do you think that you know, because we're all very, very great at giving kids, you know, sort of participation trophies and things like that. I mean, do you think, you know, failure is part of the road to creative success?
I'm sure it is. And there's a lot of talk of failure in our game, you know, fail faster and failure is good. And so, yes, I think it's an acceptable and of course, necessary part of stuff. What I would say is 2 things on it, really. One is no one ever talks about failure being carrying on as you are. And I think that's a really important thing, right? Which is, what are you more afraid of? Fucking up trying something or literally waking up the way you are? And I think that I'd started to feel at Grey, but at other times in my life, like failure would be not trying versus messing up what I was going to try. Like, really define failure, really define regret. You know, no one ever really regrets having a swing at something. They don't, man. They really don't. The regrets people have are, I shouldn't have stayed with him, or I shouldn't have stayed at that place, or, you know. And so I think really regret is something we should only reserve for genuine massive life fuck-ups. the majority of which, right, when you try to do something creative are not really fuck-ups. You know, you learn rapidly. And honestly, like I said, I genuinely believe trying anything new, you know, we just built a floral sculpture of a middle finger for it was our first art installation for the first day of spring. It was made of over 1,000 flowers. We didn't have a client. It wasn't for a client. It was for us. And we just called it Dear Winter. And it was about all of us wanting to just exhale and get rid of fucking winter. Now, there was no real reason to go do that, but there's no real reason to go do anything, you know? And I kind of looked at it and went, we just want to contribute to conversation, to energy, to put things out there and to get people talking about it. And it was beautiful and cathartic. And the act of making it, I think, taught the studio many, many things, you know, in a really positive way. You know, and I just put that out there because this failure thing, honestly, be more afraid of what you won't do than what you will. You should be far more afraid of that.
That's profound stuff as well. And of course, that whole, you know, middle finger business to, you know, to winter. I mean, that speaks to the whole attitude of the agency as well. So, you know, I'm sure there is an obvious benefit to, you know, to that anyway. Well, look, I mean, you know, we're talking about creativity. While I've still got you, on the sort of in that vein now. I mean, just for fun, I wanted to just ask you to imagine that we were going to have like the, you know, the Nils Leonard Award for creativity. I mean, I do come up with some silly stuff, but here we go. I mean, the point is, gold, silver, and bronze. What brands, companies, or campaigns really stick in your mind as creative?
From Rage Against the Machine.
Rage Against the Machine.
Yeah. So we've all forgotten, right? But music and music artists used to be the most badass voices of change on the planet. There's that quote by Saul Williams, you know, legislation won't necessarily start a riot, but the right song can make someone pick up a chair. And Rage Against the Machine stopped the New York Stock Exchange, man. They played a gig outside the Stock Exchange and stopped it, right? Like, we've forgotten the power of that type of stuff, and we've become scared of it. We've become Nesh as a bunch of thinkers. We've become tidy and tender and soft. And I think their urgency was amazing. And I don't just mean everything they've done. I just think the whole rhetoric of Rage Against the Machine, the musical scene they created, the actual authentic mix of rap, rock. I'm an old metal fan. And it was all of it, man. Evil Empire, the iconography they made, the truth they spoke, the decisions they've made from the inception of that group to now. I just think they were phenomenal.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't think enough people are willing to have a swing at the whole world, really, rather than make a slightly better version of events. And I think they are. Patagonia, Vote the Assholes Out, that label. Yeah. I mean, they're like genius, right? But also, we're all holding it up as marketing genius. It's not marketing. They own the product. And they said to themselves, we're going to sell 10,000 pairs of these jeans. What's the most powerful place we could just place our shared value, right? That's their shared value.
Yeah.
They were going to sell jeans to people that believed, like them, that government needed to get the fuck out of town. And they're like, right, we're going to stick it on a label. And that's all they had to do. And that thing traveled globally. That one image traveled globally. I thought that was phenomenal. Right. You know? God, there's loads of stuff like that. Third one, From Any Time and Anywhere or Anything.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Eve Klein. Do you know this story?
No.
This is the best one. This might even be gold, actually. It might switch this. This might be gold.
Okay.
So Eve Klein was responsible. I'll do this as quick as I can. Eve Klein was an artist, 650s, 60s, whatever, was responsible for this mad, mad color blue, right? Like it was like the brightest blue you've ever seen, like a Majorelle blue. And he would paint things in it, okay? Like, you know, there'd be a wall covered in it and you'd go see it. And he was like a rock and roll artist, so celebs
would
go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I know where you are, yeah.
Okay. And he would fill a swimming pool with it and everyone would go, oh, my God. Anyway, he hosts this exhibition called The Void in Paris and asks everyone along. And there's a queue outside. There's no social media. It's like the 60s. All the celebs and the who's who are there, all queuing outside. They're getting fed drinks while they're waiting, so they're not too unhappy. You know, they're all like drinking away, getting pissed. Eventually, after 2 fucking hours of waiting outside, he starts letting them in one by one. And they go in. There's a white room. And they're all in there like waiting for the wall to fall down or waiting for a window or a troop. Right. And they're being served more drinks while they're in there thinking, well, something's going to happen. Maybe he's going to come out and talk to us. Right. More drinks. Nothing. They just go for it. And eventually, of course, this peaks into arrogance. They're like, what an arrogant bastard asking us here, queuing, all that shit. And they're drunk now and irate. And they go, screw this. And they all leave. That's all that happens. They all leave. They go back to their hotel rooms, their beautiful Parisian pads. They go back, and just before bed, they go, fuck, I need a piss. They've been drinking all night. They go to the toilet to piss, and a jet of pure blue comes out. comes out. And I'm like, right, okay, that's shut down, right? That's like, you know, he'd been spiking the drinks all night with a dye that would turn their urine blue. And it's like they became our, in that moment, there's no real reason to do that other than to mess with people. What I love about that story is no one could take a picture of that. That exists as a story, right? Literally as a passed along story. What an incredible thing. So that's really, amazing. Man, like that stuff.
That's great. That thank you. So I wasn't aware of that. And I will, we'll make sure we put a link to something to do with that because in the show notes, but okay. So performance art and very creative people. I do want to discuss Nick Cave with you.
Yes.
I mean, I'll talk about Nick Cave whenever, but I mean, you know, the Uncommon's making your first feature film, right?
And yeah, the trailer just dropped yesterday. The official trailer dropped yesterday. This much I know to be true. It's a music documentary with Nick and Warren and Marianne Faithfull, actually.
Now you're talking. Fantastic. I mean, when's it actually coming out?
It's got a cinema release. There's ticketed cinema release that's happening, and then the distribution's still being worked out. Who knew? I'm learning every day about how films work. But you'll be able to see it simulcast in cinemas, which would be brilliant. It's already obviously played out at certain film festivals. So if you're lucky enough to get
over here,
by Southwest,
they're advertising over here in the US already, anyway.
Yeah. So look, man, we're over the moon about it. It was one of those ones where
what a project.
A little bit like, I suppose, the brands that we love, there are also artists. You know, I think Nick matters. I think his writing matters. I think his energy and his story, and it's just amazing, isn't it? And that opportunity came along. We were just like, my God, we'd love to produce that. So we found a way to do it, you know? And
that's
we've got a second film bubbling now, not with Nick, a different one, but still hopefully very Uncommon. And, you know, the Uncommon Creative Studios production model is up and running now properly. So it's really exciting. It's really exciting.
So
actually,
what differentiates an Uncommon film from the, because surely there's going to be something different in it.
Well, I would have thought so. I mean, I think first of all, you'll feel the conversations in it.
Right.
It does, you know, the conversations that run through Nick's narrative are about life and about the time we have and about all sorts of truths, aren't they? And I think the narrative in that film is very, very hopeful, I think, but it's about collaboration, creative collaboration with Warren, and it's about our time here together, you know, and the Marianne part of that equation is very moving, I think. And so you'll feel it. And so I would argue it feels very Uncommon. It sounds weird to say that, but, you know, I think the other films we've got coming create conversations in a different way, but they create conversations too.
Right.
I'd love to believe every film we made wouldn't just come and go. It wouldn't be a nice piece of entertainment. It would leave you with something inside, asking questions of your own life and about what you're about, would leave you inspired, wanting to go make your mark on the world. You know, Nick, during the break, became a sculptor, you know, and there's lovely little humble truths there. And there's just lots in there. I mean, you tell me after you've watched it whether you think it was an Uncommon film, but I'd love to believe it felt a bit like an Uncommon film. And
that's very,
you know,
very
watch
cool.
The space.
What a crazy idea. It's fantastic. And of course, Marianne Faithfull. I mean, I got to say, I mean, she was Broken English was, one of my kind of favourite albums when I was growing up. I mean, the Ballad of Lucy Jordan and stuff like that. It was just absolutely fantastic track. I mean, was just out of interest, just anecdotally, what's his feeling about the Peaky Blinders using his track?
I didn't ask about it.
All right.
I mean, I'm pretty sure he's all right about it. I mean, what I loved is that, for what it's worth, I know he consulted with the guys on that film in the most meaningful way. And if you listen to not just that track, but all of it, there's a reversion of Skepta that feels very Nick Cave in that. And I think it uses gongs and hammers and whatever. And I think he influenced far more than just use a track. I think his musical sonic sort of energy was all over that series. Oh. You know, everything had a kind of a bell or a gong, and everything had this creep and this, you know. So I'd love to believe he influenced far more, you know, than that. I think the sonic landscape of that whole entire series is probably down to Nick and Warren, to be honest with you.
He reminds me a lot of the sort of the David Bowie approach to creativity. And I mean, he just gives absolutely zero fucks about what anybody else thinks about his own creative output.
But this is what I mean. It's like, do your thing, have your version of events. You know, the not enough people are. Yeah. And the Red Hand Files and the letters he writes and the way he sees the world and the music he wants to put out, just he does it. And he does it because he feels it and he really believes it and it's authentic. And as a result, he's rewarded, I think, with the attention and the praise and the support that he gets. And I just think everything about that he really gets. It's also worth saying, by the way, like, completely different to me and you. Nick and Warren and everybody, they have this real cool energy. Like, I can't quite explain. Like, I'm not being funny. The moment you enter the vibe, everything is just, you know, and there is an amazing wisdom and everything is heard and everything is, you know, it's a very powerful thing that they conjure. And I think that's the benchmark of really, really talented people, is the energy they exude. I think it impacts on everything around them. I think that's not many people do that, I don't think.
That's a great observation. Fantastic. And okay, well, listen, I've kept you. I've just got a couple more questions to ask you. I mean, forthcoming announcements for Uncommon. What's coming up? I mean, obviously you've got a movie coming out. You've got coffee brands, sex brands. I mean, is there anything that you haven't discussed that you want to just let people know about?
Yeah, no, we've got Unrest, obviously, that's just broken. So please, you know, I'd love as many people listening to this to go and have a look at that and maybe get involved and get their brands into there. We're, you know, the studio has always been a studio, not an agency in this sense. So the design side of the studio is also now really firing on all cylinders. We just won a very prolific and big client in the form of the Museum of London, who we're working with, which I'm over the moon about. You know, we also branded the City of Coventry, which I don't know if you know, for their City of Culture. But the design side of the studio is expanding heavily, which is a lot of fun. As you know, we talked about the movies. We're doing much more work globally, so you know, we're in the States quite a bit more than we were before, which is, you know, a lot of fun. And there's a lot of brands over there that do see the world like we do and want to make a dent, you know. So yeah, hopefully if you're over there, we'll see a lot more of you and the people that listen.
Be fantastic. Be welcome around my pad anytime, man.
That'd be great. Thank you, man. Fantastic. But that's sort of that. And you know, some amazing work breaking, you know, the British Airways stuff. I cannot wait for people to see. I'm really proud of that.
And when's that break?
About 3 weeks, 4 weeks.
So that'll be April, mid-April.
Something like that.
So, okay, so by the time we release it, it should be just about coming out. So excellent. Good stuff.
That'll be exciting, you know.
Excellent. And obviously, people want to reach you, they can go to...
Twitter's probably best. I'm on Twitter, but, you know, Instagram as well. I'd rather not give out my email because, I don't get to the emails that I get now. So the best place to reach me is probably there.
Yeah.
At Nils Leonard. I've got a strange name, so I'm quite easy to find.
Nice one. Excellent. Well, we'll put all that in the show notes so people, if they've got a great idea and they want to get it to you, that's probably the easiest way. Fantastic. Okay, so the last three things of the interview, show and tell. Did you bring something for our show and tell?
This. I was talking about
a driver.
Yeah, right. So it's a golden driver. It's the same one that Donald Trump has. And you may recognize this in the story I told you about OVO, our first client.
Right.
One of the things we did, because Donald's stance on the environment at that time, pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, was pretty negative around the environment. And so we worked with Alison Jackson and made a viral video where Donald gets out of his car and smashes a solar panel to pieces with this. So this is what he smashed the solar panel to pieces with. If you find it online, it made Reddit. It was kind of crazy. And then it just suddenly disappeared, which tells you quite a lot, I suppose, about you know, the Secret Service.
Fantastic. So, I thought that was a golf club sitting behind you, and I couldn't see the end of it. I thought it was a golf club. Yeah. Fantastic.
This thing sits downstairs in our shop. We have a shop at the bottom of the studio where you can buy all our merch and everything. And that sits on the wall there. Yeah.
Very, very cool. Nice one. Okay, Nils, great. A song. So hit me with a song.
Hand of God, Nick Cave, gotta be.
Brilliant.
Love it. I think I love that. I mean, I love loads of his work, but of course I'd use Nick. But that song in particular, I mean, honestly, if anyone had a preconception of Nick Cave, listen to that and it will be completely at odds with it.
It's super complex as well as a song. It's just got so many bits of it.
Great. I saw him play it live, and Warren in particular starts kind of like it's like a churchy kind of sort of hypnotic kind of mantra type thing going on. It's very strange, but everyone I know who went to that gig with me came out going, "Hand on God," and you're like, super weird, really, really weird. So yeah, go listen to that.
But that's the weird thing. There's not a hook. It's just a thing that he does, you know, and it's just a way repetition. There's almost something sort of Southern Baptist about the whole, you know, the
right
way.
That's right. I love it. That's right. You can feel it. That's right. And he's all talking about going in the water and losing his way. And it's good. It's all that sexy Nick stuff. Love it's it. Great.
Absolutely fantastic. And a book. Now the book, I guess, kind of rounds off this conversation quite nicely.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, the book is. I brought a copy. I mean, I love this book. It's Grief is a Thing with Feathers by Max Porter. You can read it in a weekend probably, but. It's a story of someone whose partner dies and they're visited by grief. And it was created as well as a stage show with Cillian Murphy, actually, which was also brilliant. But the book is phenomenal. And I think it's a game changer, genuinely. I think all writing is, right, is words in a certain order. Somehow, though, Max found a way to put words in a different order to them than the ones I've ever, you know, it's like, you know, magical dangers, reign of silence, unkillable trickster, aphrodisiac disaster, tragic comedy, the baby, the song, I miss my wife. I'm like, okay. Like, what? It's just unbelievable. It really is. So I have a pile of these and I force it into the hand of anybody that comes in the studio. So please do go and buy yourself a copy.
Excellent stuff. Well, that's fantastic, and that's going to go on my read list as well. So
you must.
Yeah, fantastic. Good stuff. Well, I mean, if anybody who didn't know you too well, they might say that given your choice of song and the book and everything, they'd probably say there was quite an introspective side. But you know, that just all makes you so much more interesting. I mean, it's been absolutely fantastic, Nils. It's been a real show for the ages. So thank you very much, and I've genuinely enjoyed talking to you, and it's been I hope we can do it again for you, and in the vein of the sex product, how was it for you?
Thank you so much, man. It was really good. Thanks, and thank you for your time and for the interest as well.
Thanks for sharing your wisdom, and we look forward to the Nick Cave documentary. This much I know to be true. Listeners can catch, I think it comes out sort of in late April. It's been very enjoyable. You've been a great guest. Thank you very much. We'll have all the notes, all the important stuff in the show notes at thefuelpodcast.com. But in the meantime, Nils, just keep doing what you're doing. It's fantastic. You're an inspiration to us all. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll see you again soon, my friend.
See you later. Bye, buddy.
I'm inspired. Are you inspired? He's a creative machine, isn't he? How can we ever top that? Well, just you hang about and listen, because the Fuel Podcast is where all the agency superstars come to play. We've got two spectacular shows coming up with Jack Williams of Deloitte's new creative unit, Acme, and he's a solid, highly awarded new business winner. And we also have a wonderful wide-ranging chat about agency client management and direction with the legendary Simon De Rungs. So watch out for those. I just want to say thanks to Team Fuel. That's Matt, Donna, Peter, and especially you, our bloody wonderful listeners. Thank you so much for all your support and helping us to grow. Fuel is a member of the Marketing Podcast Network, which is a collection of marketing podcasts. That's PR, digital, content marketing, influencer marketing, sales, and entrepreneur podcasts. So if you like this show, you can check out all the others at marketingpodcast.net. That's podcast plural with an S at the end. Or you can look in the show notes and I'll put a link there at www.thefuelpodcast.com. So that's it for me for this show. Ta-da for now. We'll be back next week on Fuel, the podcast for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you? I'm a Smith called Keith, and you're listening to Fuel, where sales and marketing never sounded so good. Visit thefuelpodcast.com for all our shows.